Welcome back to the Word for Life radio ministry. In January, the past couple of years, we focused on missions. For this month, we'd like some feedback, and we're calling it Letter Month. Basically, we'd like to hear from you folks, our listeners, and kind of give us an idea of how the broadcasts are helping you, maybe motivating or encouraging you. Many times we tell our stories, and we'd love to hear your stories. If you'd be so kind, maybe sometime during this month, if you would go to www.thewordforlife.org, click on the Contact Us link, and drop us a note. Now, feel free to include any topics that you'd like for us to address in the future. If you have any question about a particular topic, odds are that other listeners do also. So please take a minute and drop us a note. We'd really appreciate it. And Jerry Fry, you're here today to give us some more invigorating thoughts about our great God. And we're going to be talking about the way God created the world. And it's just amazing that, as you shared before, Romans chapter 1 says that mankind who knew God, didn't want to glorify him as God, weren't thankful, and then professed themselves to be wise, proving how foolish they really were. And that's exactly where our world society is today.
Yeah, I would agree. And Psalm 14:1 says that the fool in his heart says there is no God.
Right.
And if you think about the idea of naturalism, which is the underlying philosophy of the scientific world, that philosophy says that everything has to be attributed to natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
And so a priori, or before they even get started, they will, in fact, deny that God can have any part of this. So it's no wonder that at the end it says, professing to be wise, they became fools.
Sure.
Because we're told that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Right, right.
So today, as another example, in that Romans 1 verse again, it says that we can know about God through general revelation. And what we can know about is evident in us and around us in by what has been made. So today I thought I'd take you through an example of something called the pileated woodpecker.
Hmm.
So this woodpecker is, you know, actually considered a pest by some, because they will, in fact, drill holes and can drill holes in almost anything organic.
Mm-hmm.
But the woodpecker is a marvelous example of engineering. And so the woodpecker needs special claws, a special tail. It has a specially designed beak. Its brain and skull is a marvel of engineering. The tongue is absolutely inexplainable to an evolutionist. And it has a whole series of very specialized muscles.
Hmm.
So to start, the woodpecker has four claws, like all birds do,
okay.
But most birds have three claws to the front and one to the tail, or to the rear. And the reason for that is that's an optimal configuration for perching. But if you think about a woodpecker is not usually standing with its legs underneath it.
Right.
The legs are out in front of it because it's against a vertical tree,
right,
or whatever it's trying to peck its way through. So its configuration is two and two,
mm.
So very, very much organized in a way that it can hold itself stable vertically against a tree rather than designed for perching.
Right.
Then the woodpecker tail, the middle four tail feathers are a little longer than normal. So we can compare a woodpecker. It's about the size of a crow.
Yeah.
Or its closest non-woodpecker relative is a lark. It's about that size. And compared to those birds, the middle four tail feathers are much longer. They're also considerably harder and stiffer and thicker. So they're made so that actually as the woodpecker puts itself up against the tree, that tail can serve as a third appendage. So it's like a tripod
sure.
against the tree.
Right.
This allows it to handle the enormous G-forces, that's gravity, the force of gravity, that occur when a woodpecker moves its head. So about 20 times a second, it can move its head and hit whatever it's going to look at. And when it does that, the deceleration forces on the entire woodpecker's frame and brain, et cetera, is about 1,000 Gs. Now, when we think of advanced fighter planes, you know, we're talking about 8 Gs, 9 Gs. That's nine times the force of gravity.
Right.
We think, or scientists think, that the biggest G-force that people survive might be 100 Gs by some race car drivers when they're inside these, you know, very secure cocoons that are made to help them survive.
Right.
The estimate is that the G-force might get to 100.
Okay.
But in general, humans can't survive crashes anything over 5, 6, 7 Gs. So here's a woodpecker at 20 times a second having deceleration forces. That means the force that's created by stopping, by its actually hitting the hard surface, is 1,000 times the strength of gravity, 1,000 Gs. So obviously, as it puts that much force, you can imagine the pressure to be able to hold itself on the tree.
Oh, yeah.
So these claws and their special configuration and these tail feathers and the outer tail feathers are shorter so that it's very clear that there's this tripod effect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the woodpecker's actually holding onto the tree in five locuses, right? There's two on each claw, two above and two below, and then the tail feather. So then we get to the beak. It turns out that most birds' beaks are made from a material that's round or like rods, tiny little rods. Well, it turns out that the pleated woodpecker, instead, the material is flat, and it's very thick.
Hmm.
And there's a lattice between the rows, and the rows are much closer together. So they're denser, and they're closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of this, the woodpecker's beak is just incredibly strong. The same structure is in its brain structure. So as I'm going through this, I want you to think of all of the successive changes that would have to happen to the various parts of the woodpecker.
Yeah.
Earlier, we talked about the human ear and the three middle bones, the ossicles, and how evolutionists say they came from a premammalian animal and ultimately became the middle ear of the human. That's part of an irreducibly complex system, but I'm still only talking about one part of it, right, the middle ear. Here, I'm talking about all different parts of the woodpecker,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they all have to change at the same time or in gradual succession. And theoretically, each one of the transitional forms should be useful, right? Otherwise, why would it survive?
Exactly right.
So when you look at the beak, it's very specially designed so that the lower beak actually goes at a slight angle to the upper beak. And the upper beak actually deflects just a smidgen when it hits. It turns out that this action on the part of the two beaks being slightly different and one being slightly off-center, it turns out that that deflects about 15% of the energy and keeps it away from going into the skull to be absorbed. It has this beak. It has this incredible structure of a skull, a very strong skull, which is 10 times stronger than the lark skull that it's supposedly related to. Then it has this tongue. The woodpecker tongue is very hard to describe, except that the tongue can extend from the end of the mouth about 10 to 12 inches. So it can go a long way. So the question is, well, where is all that tongue when it's not outside of the mouth?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it turns out that it comes underneath the jaw, up behind the ear, over the top of the head, and comes back down near the nostrils.
My goodness.
Up front. So this thing winds all the way around.
Yeah.
Well, it turns around that that tongue in that space actually serves as a shock absorber. This tongue is barbed on the end, so like a fish hook or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the woodpecker puts its tongue in one of the holes that it's created, it will, you know, spear these bugs,
mm-hmm.
whatever it's after. It turns out that also there's a very sticky substance that's created on the end of the tongue, similar to a super glue. In fact, this glue is so strong that if the woodpecker put it inside its own mouth, it would close its mouth and it couldn't open.
Oh, my goodness.
So as a result, it has a special enzyme that dissolves the glue as soon as it hits the mouth. So it has to create first the glue
mm-hmm.
and an ability to put it on the tongue without gluing the mouth shut. And then it has to go out, and that glue is helpful in catching this thing and putting it on the barbs on the tongue. Then when it brings it back, this glue is essentially melted off so that the woodpecker can eat the bug or pass the bug along to its younger offspring.
Right.
So this woodpecker tongue, it becomes almost impossible to explain how did it evolve. But there is evolution. If you look in the books, there are attempts.
At
describing how it evolved. And so there's a bone called the hyoid bone that extends to the back of the skull for the woodpecker. Most of the time it doesn't extend back that far. And the discussion or the argument that's made is that as this bone evolved over millions of years, it dragged the tongue back with it. There's no real explanation about why the front of the tongue continued to grow
mm-hmm.
to fill the space,
mm-hmm.
but that's what they say,
okay.
which is not too dissimilar to the argument they make with respect to the Meckel's cartilage, if you remember, drying up and pulling down the reptilian jaw and pulling those three structures
mm-hmm.
that ultimately become the inner ear.
Right.
So anyway, that's the explanation, but it's awful hard to swallow that. The woodpecker brain skull, they hit their target 20 times a second. The woodpecker actually is not perpendicular to the tree. And so as it strikes, the tail is closer than the head.
Okay.
And so this gives it this ability to ratchet against the tree. And as a result of that, that means that the beak is off of a 90-degree angle. And that's not good. You want to hit at 90 degrees to have the maximum force to get the most penetration. And the woodpecker adjusts for this on each peck.
Wow.
While it's adjusting for this, it closes its eyes. And the reason for this is that with 1,000 times the force of gravity, its eyes would literally pop out of the head if it didn't close its eyes. And so as it closes its eyes, it has a third membrane. It has a third eyelid that humans don't have. Many birds do. In this case, the point of this is to hold the eyes into the eye socket. So what this bird is doing is taking aim very quickly, closing its eyes, right?
Right.
And then hitting this thing square. And it hits at 90 degrees virtually every time.
My goodness.
They've gone over this. They've looked at them in slow motion, and that's where they come out. They also have an incredibly thick neck, and they have a series of muscles in the neck and around the beak that are much stronger than normal muscles. They're considerably thicker and stronger. So the woodpecker actually is the inspiration for most modern shock absorbers.
Wow.
So there are four features in there, four systems in place that protect the woodpecker's brain.
Mm-hmm.
As we've studied each of those systems, we've taken those ideas and used them to create the shock absorbers we have today. So we have essentially the beak and how it operates. We have the spongy-like area that we've replaced with glass beads inside of shock absorbers.
Mm-hmm.
We have the hyoid elastic area, the bone area. And between the cranial structure in the woodpecker, in humans, there's a place for some cranial fluid.
Yep.
And obviously it's a problem when we have too much fluid on the brain.
Sure.
Woodpecker has very, very little space for fluid there. So that means it doesn't transfer as much energy against the skull. So clearly specially designed, and I'll just close on this. I'll read out of what an evolutionist textbook says about this. Through natural selection, woodpeckers have developed their own amazing nanofabrication and self-assembly capabilities in their cranial bone structure over millions of years of evolution. No discussion of how, they just did this. Many other interesting adaptations are seen in different species of woodpeckers. Some species have modified joints between certain bones in the skull and the upper jaw, as well as muscles which contract to absorb the shock of the hammering, strong neck and tail feather muscles, a chisel-like bill, and other hammering adaptations are seen in other species. So you get the idea here that it's very difficult from an evolutionist perspective to describe how a creature like the pilotted woodpecker came to be.
Exactly. And thank you, Brother Fry. If you're interested in knowing more of these types of things, he's going to be with us at Brookside Baptist Church Tuesday evening, April the 8th, beginning at 7. And the topic is going to be denying the Creator, professing themselves to be wise, they make themselves fools. That's Brookside Baptist, 4470 North Pilgrim Road, Brookfield, Wisconsin, Tuesday, April 6th, beginning at 7. And if you're not in the area, feel free to tune in and watch it online at www.brooksidelive.com. God bless you. Until the next time we meet.